Scheffler's, but not Mike Sirota. Not my double A outfielder for the Tulsa Drillers in the Dodgers system. Not him.
Is the streak still alive?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He did it. What is he, one game away now?
I think he had two more hits last night.
So he's one game away from the all-time, any level, games with base reach successfully list.
That's correct.
How about that?
He's got over 70 right now.
And I think that's a better stat, honestly, than like Paul Molitor's consecutive games with a hit, Joe DiMaggio's consecutive games with a hit streak, because pitchers can take you out of that, right? Like they can just give you nothing to hit and then you're not going to get a hit. But reaching base consecutively.
Wouldn't that be the reason why it's more impressive with the hits?
It's more impressive, but I also think in today's day and age, they're just not going to give you something to hit. You can't, you're like, worry about what you can control, right? You can't make them give you a hittable pitch.
I think what it means is, and look, this is a minor league guy, who knows? But I think, like, for instance, when you look at Barry Bonds, when he was probably doing something very similar, it means that the league respects you so much, they're like, forget it. We're going to pitch around you. We're trying. It's the unintentional walk, but it's really an intentional walk. When you get to be that good, you earn that kind of respect from teams and from players. And managers, and that's how it was with Barry. I mean, Barry Bonds, I don't know how many bases loaded intentional walks he got.
But if anyone was going to beat it, it would have been him that year.
Yeah,
but they don't give him anything to hit.
No, it was insane. I mean, his on-base percentage that one crazy year was
over
660.
Yeah.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. But anyway, so my man Mike Sirota is still continuing his streak.
We'll see. Hey, by the way, Barry Bonds' number of pills taken before a game was also over 60 that year.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know. Well, it didn't do pills. It was the cream and the clear.
Oh, that's
different.
That's right.
It's like a balm.
Head size changed at the age of 25, made him a medical miracle.
Just, you know, it was just ego. It just swelled up like that. Mike is in Dearborn. Welcome to 97.1. Hey, Mike.
Hey, gentlemen. You know, I'm all about the Tigers buying right now. You know, I know you guys have thrown out the name Taylor Ward. I've been big on him this year, just a right-handed bat getting on base and not a liability defensively, but some relief pitchers that I feel like are very gettable. You know, I'm calling the Marlins, looking at Michael Peterson. The Mets, I'm looking at Devin Williams, their closer, maybe Luke Weaver. And if the Padres keep slipping, there's a lefty that I really like, Adrian Morgan. I mean, as much as I'd love to get Mason Miller, I don't think Scott Harris is willing to pay that price. But Morgan throws 100-mile-an-hour sinkers, and I feel like he'd be a really good high-leverage arm. And with all these pieces together, whether you get just a couple, I really think the Tigers could make a real push for that World Series.
Yeah, there will be plenty of pitchers available, and you know, everybody's looking for bullpen arms. So it's a domino effect. Once the first one goes, you're going to see a bunch of them go, and you know, various degrees of how good these pitchers are. Will they be focused on getting an Aroldis Chapman if Boston makes him available? I mean, Boston's in it as much as the Tigers are when it comes to this wild card race. And, you know, this is why the next 2.5 weeks of baseball are awfully important. It's jockeying for position. It's do you have a chance to make the postseason or not? And, you know, San Diego is that team to look at. They have no shot at winning their division because they're in division with the Dodgers. And they're, 15, 14 games back in that division. But they're falling further and further back in the wild card race. Mm-hmm. So if San Diego finds himself out and they have to rebuild and they've got that chip of Mason Miller. And the report came out the other day that they might have to trade him. And if they were to trade him, and I know that you say, like, you don't think Scott Harris would make that move, and maybe he doesn't, but I think most Detroiters would because, I mean, he's got 3 years of team control after this year. The guy is outstanding now.
I don't think most Detroiters would. I think
you
we'd have
think so?
Because of the love of Max Clark and everything he's about and the flash and the bling. I think it's the right baseball move. I think you and I would have to get on our podium and pedestal and deliver our best politician stump speech to make that work.
Well, and the reason we bring up Max Clark's name is because, I mean, the player that they had to give up last year to acquire him was arguably the number one prospect in all of baseball.
Correct.
And Max Clark is a top 10, top 12 prospect, depending which service you look at. But he's a very highly thought of prospect in baseball. And I would imagine that's where the conversation starts if you're San Diego. If they are going to get to the point where they're going to move Mason Miller and you're the Tigers and you want to inquire about his availability, it probably starts there. Maybe they pivot off of that and go somewhere else. I don't know. Look, that's a discussion that we just brought up yesterday because the story came out. But we'll monitor the situation with the Padres for sure to see if they're going to be sellers or not. I don't know if they're going to be buyers. They have nothing to offer because they gave up their entire organization last year to acquire Mason Miller.
I think your mind would be blown at the caliber of current MLB star that Scott Harris would not trade Max Clark for. Right. I mean, I don't think he's available. I don't think guys like that this organization has invested a lot of resources in are available really to anybody.
Well, I hope that that's not the case. I hope that everybody's flexible and the right offer comes along. You listen to it. And it's not like Max Clark has a 900 OPS right now.
I mean, 760
had a couple hits last night, which was good. And he's got 20 stolen bases. Now he stole a base last night. He plays outstanding defense. Despite what you may have remembered from the spring training experiment where he was playing left field, which is not his position, and he had a couple drops out there and it didn't look good, he's a really good defensive center fielder. He is the future of this franchise, and if you're going to give up the future of the franchise, it's going to have to be for something spectacular. Mason Miller would be that, if he's available.
Most unhittable pitcher in baseball, almost a 2 strikeout per inning number that he's posting. Oh, by the way, a 104-mile-an-hour fastball that moves.
Yeah, that's good to have at the back end. But I think what screams Detroit Tigers over the years, what they would do is to try to make a pitch for Aroldis Chapman, an aging closer, past his prime, but still getting the job done. Because it's just what the Tigers do.
Why?
I mean, I'm conditioned to that. I've seen it a million times over the last almost 20 years. This is what they've done. From Troy Percival, to Kyle Farnsworth, to Ugarte Urbina, to a million other guys, Papa Grande, and then they had Fernando Rodney was their own guy that they, you know, gave up on after a point in time, and Joe Nathan was another one. I mean, they've had a million of these guys that were at the end of their career that gave a chance. K-Rod was part of the Tigers. I mean, it's just how they operate. I'd love to see it operate differently where you go out and get the next young closer. I'd like to see a resource put into that at some point. But you have to give something to get something.
How many more outings like last night would you stomach before you pull the plug on the Kenley Jansen closer experience?
I'd likely pull the plug on it now.
Really?
But they don't have somebody else. I mean, what, Kyle Finnegan? I don't know if he's closer material, but you know, the word closer it's interesting. It's really about its leverage. It's not necessarily closing out the ninth inning. It's closing out the heart of a lineup late in the game.
Exactly.
Whether that comes up in the eighth inning or the ninth inning. You know, you've got to be ready to pounce on that. And AJ Hinch has been pretty good about that. He's always said, we don't have a closer. We have, you know, different ways we go about setting up the back end of the bullpen, depending on who's coming up. And I agree with that stance. But the other part of that is the Tigers don't have that guy that's that lockdown guy at the end of the games. So, yeah, that's been elusive.
And Jansen was brought here to be that guy. Still physically imposing. The problem is his stuff isn't anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the guy who was there, who was going to be that guy, was Joel Zamaya. And then, unfortunately, whether it was Guitar Hero or moving boxes or whatever it was that caused his career to come to an end, that was really disappointing because that guy, you talk about electric. Joel Zamaya, when he came in games in 2006, everybody was going nuts. This guy throwing a ball over 100 miles an hour and, you know, coming up as a rookie with Justin Verlander, and you had the starter, you had the closer, and he wasn't necessarily closing all the games then, but he was back in bullpen guy. He was electric.
I think Mason Miller has better stuff than he does.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking, you know, a couple decades later. Reno is in Royal Oak. Reno, welcome to 97.1.
Hey, fellas, before the feel-good moment, that one that Jansen gave up where McKinstry didn't have to move a fraction of it. That dude, he smoked that ball to the point.
And the one after that, too.
He didn't have time to move, even if he wanted to.
Yeah.
But anyway, Gator, you guys, it goes back a ways. And at my stage of the game, I'm grateful I can remember this far back. But in 87, it was game 4, the LCS versus the Twins. Darrell Evans just had a brutal game. He had 2 errors. He got picked off at first, and there was another one where he had a throwing issue that wasn't deemed to be an error. And it was at the post game was just with the interview with the reporters. It's kind of like the way he was acting is like keep the sharp objects away from him. But game 5, first time up at bat, there wasn't a single person that was sitting in the stadium. They gave him a standing ovation, and he had to pull out and just kind of gather himself. It was pretty awesome that people gave him that kind of ovation after the previous game they had, because people were questioning whether or not he should have even been in the lineup in game five. But total cool thing that they did for him with Evans at third.
Yeah, it was cool. And, you know, being a teenager at that time, and that team, that 87 team, was an outstanding team. But back then, you had four teams in Major League Baseball make the playoffs. The American League East champ took on the American League West champ, and vice versa in the, or likewise, I should say, in the National League. So that was it. You had one round of playoffs before the World Series. And that 87 team was chock full of guys with 20 home runs. I think they had eight or nine guys that had 20 home runs on that team. It was really crazy. And Evans was a big part of that team. It was the end of his career. But, you know, Darryl hit 34 home runs that year, drove in 99. And that was a couple years removed from him hitting 40 home runs with the Tigers in 1985. He was kind of a beloved player. And had an awful game in the league championship series and made, you know, still the fans still loved them, and that was really cool to see. I'm glad you brought that moment up. It was one that I'd totally forgotten of. But we're looking for stuff after 2000, to be fair. Looking for the stuff after 2000. 248-539-9797 is a telephone number. You know, Scott Harris is not the only general manager in town that has tough decisions to make, right? You've got all four general managers in the respective sports have difficult jobs ahead. We'll talk about that and kind of try to rank them. Who's got the toughest job and who's got the easiest job? Continue to take your calls and texts. You want to talk about the Tigers? Do you think that this is a team that they're going to do it? They're going to make the playoffs right now. You can replant your flag if you uprooted it back in May. Are you ready to plant it back down now? Or do you think this team is just a roller coaster and that's what they're destined for, is just a roller coaster season and not making the playoffs? Or do you think, nope, this is who they are? They'll make the playoffs. And looking for those emotional moments over the last 25 years, like last night watching Valencia speak to Daniela Bruce after the game last night. First game in the major leagues. It's a home run in his first at bat, and it was awesome. We'll talk about it next year, 97-1.
Hot, yeah. Especially when they're nice and crispy, but I can't put them above fries.
Really?
Maybe some fries, not the best fries.
Yeah, like a tot is, and thanks, that's Bobby behind the glass in for Kang this week. A tot is like a special treat, I feel like. Like that's something you see all the time. Like if you always, it comes with a side of fries, great. If it came with a side of tots, would I go to it all the time? I would not, but I do like a tot.
You do. If you were going to get loaded blank, would you rather get loaded fries or loaded tots?
Oh, so I'm a loaded tots guy. That's a whole different. That's a whole different meal. Loaded tots are great.
Loaded tots are great, but chili cheese fries.
Well, yeah, that's up there.
That's tough to beat.
You best fry ever.
I think the well done steak fry with some seasoning on it. And not just salt.
Those are too doughy so often.
Well, this is why it has to be well done. Right. It has to be. I mean, you got to get it done right. There are some delis in town that get it right. There's Ember's Deli in Birmingham that I think gets it right. Those are really, and you ask for them well done, they come out well done. They're outstanding. Now, what they don't offer is like the season part of that.
Yeah.
So you season yourself with it. I think they throw salt on it. But when you get that extra special seasoning that you can get from other places, that's great too. I do like the well done fry. The underdone fry is so disappointing to me.
Oh yeah,
you know, and I, of course, everybody loves McDonald's, but the problem I have with McDonald's and their fries,
it's like hit or miss.
It's usually the doneness is fine. The hit or miss part to me is like, how on earth are there so many? Is there such a disparity in the size of the fry? Like, you've got the long fries that are a few inches long, and then you've got a bunch of stubbies. I'm like, wait a minute, why do I have all these stubbies?
Well, that's not even the disparity that I have an issue with. It's that it doesn't even matter the size you get, the variance in terms of number of fries I get. True. You get a good person putting them in, you have the overflowing, and then you have this nice treats on the bottom of the bag. Then you get the other guy that doesn't even fill the large thing. I might as well have ordered a small.
That's why, I mean, Five Guys fries, I mean, you get it's too many fries. And you order seasoned fries and that, and it's great too. The problem I have with Five Guys is that they don't travel well. Like, they end up getting soggy, which can be a problem.
And they put it in the paper bag that will just end up tearing apart.
Exactly. So that ends up being an issue. But to correct that issue, you bring them home and you put them in the air fryer.
Yes, Gator.
But you shouldn't have to cook. You shouldn't have to cook your own stuff. The other problem with Five Guys.
You shouldn't have to, but God, they're good. The seasoned fries from Five Guys are really good when you get them right there, right then and there. Like I said, though, they don't travel well, so you have to do a little work. You got to be willing to go a little further.
The other problem with Five Guys costs five mortgages. That's the problem.
It's not, I mean, it's for the, if you got a double cheeseburger and fries and you're looking at, and a drink and you're looking at what, $20? It's a lot, right?
Yes.
It's a lot.
Yes.
However, the amount of fries you get is huge. The size of that burger is so big. Like, you're not finishing it.
I don't need that. I'm not going out to eat for that.
Fair enough. Yeah. But I mean, to me, that's I'm going out. I'm going to get that. That's fine. I mean, McDonald's, you're getting a couple of cheeseburgers, large fry, and you get that meal deal, and it's half the price. Look, to each their own. It's all great. And then locally, they got what's the place that has the crack fries? They no longer call them crack fries.
Hopcat. Yes, those are fries are good.
I haven't had those.
Really, yeah, those are really good.
Okay,
they had to stop calling them.
Yeah,
crack
they call
fries.
Them something else. They call
cosmic
them,
fries.
Cosmic fries. Yeah.
I got another thing that the PC police have taken away from us.
I need to interject. I'm kind of disappointed in you three. Oh. No one's brought up the best fry in the world, the curly fry.
Arby's curly fries are great.
I had some last night.
They're outstanding. That's like a top five for me.
Did you get the free curly fry?
Wait, it was free?
Well, if the Tigers score three runs or something like that?
Yeah. Oh, I must have. I came from a movie, so I must have missed
that. He's a Dodgers fan.
Yeah. But no, the curly fry is the best, and I'll say, for one, I think it's very crispy. And two, when you get that good little curl one and then the sauce kind of just collects within it, can't be beat.
Here's what's tough to argue with that. Okay, with Arby's curly fry is that you have the opportunity to dip the fry in Arby's sauce.
And that's elite.
That is elite.
It's elite.
And if you dare to dream and go with the mixture of horsey sauce and Arby's sauce.
Well, I'm sitting across from the guy who has tried everything.
What are we talking about?
I've been doing it wrong. Okay.
Man, so steak fries on top, but if you've had like shoestring fries from like Steak and Shake, those are at the bottom.
Yeah, I don't like the shoestring. They're too thin.
No, shoestring, don't do it for me. Number one goat fry. You can only pick one. Is it McDonald's?
No, I will go. I mean, for the fast food stuff, if it's fast food, I'm going to go with Five Guys because of the season aspect of it. But I mean, the Arby's, that's a compelling argument.
Checkers or Rally's fries.
I'm still going with a perfectly crisp tot. I think I recently had the best tots I ever had.
I'm going with Corbin. I'm going back to it. The Arby's curly fry, because of the condiments I get with it, it makes it a better experience. Now, sometimes I don't like the, you know, that look like the shock absorber spring, the giant curly fry. I don't need that, right? I like the smaller curl, just like two curls is good enough for me. I don't need six curls. And occasionally you get the straight one, but it's seasoned so well and it's so crispy. Those are great.
Yeah, I got to agree with that. And I will say, if I only have like two or maybe even just one of the really long, like the accordion fries, I like to call it when it comes to the curly world, I'm fine with that, but I'm in the same boat as you. Just give me the couple curls, I can manage.
Oh, I like the Inspector Gadget shock absorber. I do. Those are the best. Looks like a whole curlicue.
Yeah, but then you're taking multiple bites on the thing. I mean, fries should be one swipe into the condiment, into your mouth, and let's go. Anyway, just thought that you'd know today is National Friday. Ron's in East Point. Welcome to 97.1. Hey, Ron. Ron. Go ahead, Ron.
Yes, so I'm calling. I'm a little bit skeptical about this, how the Tigers are going to make the playoffs. Why? Because there's this such thing called the All-Star break coming up.
Yeah.
Now, being in Detroit, we all know how it's happened to the Wings a few times. And I'm hoping it's not going to happen to the Tigers.
So you're worried about the loss of momentum that they built up. You think that having a few days off is going to stop that. Well, I would say this. if you look at last year, and last year would support your argument because they had all these All-Stars in the first half of the season. Guys are playing out of their minds, and then once they got past the All-Star game, nobody was hitting, and the team limped into the playoffs. But if you go back 2 years, Ron, it was the opposite. After the All-Star break, the Tigers caught fire. That's Remember true. Jake Rogers, don't let us get hot.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But that's why I'm a little bit skeptical.
Or skeptical. Yeah, that too. Although it's a spectacle to say that, but it's fine. Thank you, Ron, for the call. You worried about momentum?
No, not at all. I'm not really feeling that at all. I believe this is a factor of these guys getting healthy, hitters starting to produce, pitchers pitching the way we know that they can, executing their pitches, finding their location, timely hitting. The most impressive thing about this stretch to me is they're doing it without Torres, right? Yeah. They've needed him this year.
Yes.
He has been the linchpin to that whole lineup. I can't wait to see what they're capable of when he comes back.
Yeah, a caller brought this up earlier about Riley Green, how he's giving the team better at bats, and he is. You know, this year compared to last year. Now, last year he hit tons of power, 36 homers, drove in 111 runs, hit .258, and he struck out 201 times in 157 games. This year, he's got 13 homers, 45 RBIs, nowhere near the pace that he had last year for those power numbers. But he's probably on pace for a similar number with doubles. Hit 31 last year. He's got 18 already this year. But he's hitting 30 points higher, .289. His OPS is actually higher this year at .841 compared to .806.
Do you like this version of Riley or the previous version?
I like this version.
Same.
Because this version isn't striking out as much. Yep. He strikes out a lot. All right, 104 strikeouts in 92 games is a lot. But that's basically one a game.
Well, what we're
he's
getting...
going to cut down his number in strikeouts significantly from what it was last year. He'll probably end up with 30 or 40 less strikeouts. Now, it's still a mess load when you're going to talk about 160, 170 strikeouts, somewhere in that, maybe 160 strikeouts. That's a mess load. The difference is, with the reduction, he's putting the ball in play and he's getting on base with those. He's a better hitter this year than what he was last year. Last year, maybe just one of these crazy power number seasons. The ball just happened to, you know, people were pitching him inside in his happy place and he did whatever he had to do. They're pitching him a little bit differently now because of all the home runs they saw, but he's become a better hitter, as evidenced by his average and his patience at the plate. Like that. 248-539-9797. We'll talk about the GM situation with our four major league teams here as we continue on 97.1. It's an interesting situation when you look at the four general managers in town. They're all in kind of tough spots right now. No job is easy, even though, you know, we joke on the show all the time. People think they can do three things. One, they think they can grill. Two, all guys think they can drive. And three, all guys think they can call plays or perhaps call the right moves as a general
manager.
I'm
glad you kept that rated G.
Yes, as much as I can. I don't think every guy thinks they can do that. But... but they have fun trying. But as far as the general managers in town are concerned, they all have a very difficult task ahead of them. They are different tasks. Some are similar. But they're all kind of in this same grouping here. When you look at the Lions and Brad Holmes, what does he have to do now? Well, now he's got almost an entire secondary he's going to have to rebuild because you don't know the situation with Kirby Joseph. You don't know when... Brian Branch is going to come back from his Achilles injury. You already waived Terry and Arnold because of his off-field situation. You've got players that just haven't played a whole lot, and you know you're expected to be one of the best teams in football, and you have major questions in the secondary. You look at Steve Yzerman with the Detroit Red Wings. It's obvious. You've got the Larkin situation, and is there a domino effect with that? Is this going to be a total rebuild where after you deal Dylan Larkin that you're going to have to think about dealing Alex DeBrincat? And who knows what you're going to do with Simon Edvinson, who's a restricted free agent, who's going to have to get paid and likely will be the highest paid player on this team after he signs this restricted free agent contract. Unless Yzerman can work magic, and some of that magic has been to get these guys under contract that are great for teams, you know, for the team, like Sider, Raymond, and Larkin's contract. Aside from the no trade clause. The Tigers, Scott Harris. Obviously, the Tarek Skubal situation is looming large. And right now, you're caught in between. Are you going to buy? Are you going to sell? Regardless of what I think, you can buy and sell at the same time. This is a team that the momentum has them going. The way that you're, what you're seeing now over the last 5 weeks, almost 6 weeks now of winning baseball, has you thinking, what do? Do you buy or do you sell?
And he's got to make a definitive black and white decision with really kind of a shades of gray environment.
And then you got Trajan Langdon, who after the ousting in the second round of the playoffs, albeit a game seven, but they got knocked out. They were the number one seed in the East, didn't live up to the expectation. He has started to rebuild this team or add to this team. But what he hasn't done yet is add what everybody wants them to add, which is a number two scorer. So, Marco, the four teams, the four general managers, the Lions, Red Wings, Pistons, and Tigers, and when you look at Holmes, Eisman, Harris, and Langdon, who's in the toughest spot? Who's got the toughest job to dig out of? Who's got the easiest job to dig out of? And who are you most confident in getting it done?
Oh, boy.
And it's a lot. It's a this is not a two-minute segment here, right? I mean, this is a real question.
Right. So I think all four of these have issues. This is not a summer in Cabo for any of the four general managers. And I was leaning Eiserman with Larkin, but I worry that
it's the toughest job.
It's already too far gone. In other words, what does it matter really at this point? He needs somebody to come in and give them exactly what Dylan Larkin does, and that offer doesn't seem to be presenting itself. I actually think it's Langdon, believe it or not, because of his philosophy to continue.
He has the toughest job?
I believe so, because the stars that were available are no longer out there. He didn't take a swing for the Jaylen Brown who was available. Giannis was never linked to Detroit. The stars that were available have all been taken, have all found new homes.
LeBron is not linked to Detroit.
Correct. In terms of, a recent ESPN article had 10 teams and one of them wasn't Detroit.
I saw another one had 6 teams and one of them was not Detroit.
Right, exactly. So when you digest the fact that fans are not going to tolerate not having a second scoring option this year, and unless Abuka Okori can become that guy overnight, you're looking at entering this season and hitting the trade deadline with the precise problem you already had. And I think the patience is going to run out on that. So I think you would say Eiserman because he's got Mission Impossible right now. But I think fans are already teetering on indifference there, which is the worst place a franchise could be. So I'm going to go Langdon, who should have been far more aggressive, in my opinion, this offseason. The one that bothers me the most is the Jaylen Brown. I thought he would have been a perfect fit. What do you do? What's the plan?
So when I look at these four GMs, the one who I think has the toughest job, and you make a compelling argument for Langdon. And the reason I'll start with why I don't look at Langdon as having the toughest job, because I think Langdon might have the longest runway. I think his runway extends all the way to the trade deadline next year with this team. And I think likely that's where they're going to make a major move. I think they've added to this team where this team is a better team. We discussed a little bit yesterday. I think they're a better team today than what they were after game 7 against Cleveland. Where they're not better is they're standing in the division because in the conference because so many teams have made the strong moves to make themselves appreciably better. Pistons have done exactly what Langdon said he was going to do. They wanted to add ball handlers and shooters. And they've added a bunch of shooters on this team. They're going to be a much better shooting team. And they've added a couple of ball handlers as well. So I think he's got the longest runway going through the trade deadline, so I don't think it's him. I think Holmes' job is tough, but it's concentrated on one position group, really. And then you're counting on the guy you hired to be the offensive coordinator to actually be a really good offensive coordinator. He's got some other things he's got to worry about. Extensions for, is he going to give LaPorta an extension? When are you going to end up paying Jahmyr Gibbs? That's going to be a big one that you got to consider. He's got some tough ones in the horizon there. So it's not like this is not an easy question. This is you make a case for all four guys. But for me, the guy who's got the toughest job, and it's not Eiserman either. I kind of agree with what you have to say. I mean, there's an edict he's got to trade Dylan Larkin. Doesn't have to, but looks like he's going to have to. Otherwise, it's going to be a really awkward time when you get to September. And part of it, he has a working partner with who's not willing to work with him right now, but at some point is going to have to say, okay, I'll work with you. Expanding the list of from three teams to four teams isn't really working with him. Dylan Larkin's going to have to do some more, and that makes that job just a little bit easier when he does expand the list even more. But to me, it's Scott Harris. Scott Harris has the toughest job because he has to figure out what does he really think? What's his real opinion of this team? Does he really think this team can contend? You know, they're playing great right now. And I'm sure he envisions some of this. Like, hey, we knew we had great starting pitching. The talk after they signed Framber Valdez on all the shows was that, and I'm sure yours as well over the weekend, was that the Tigers had maybe the best rotation in all of baseball. When you looked at it on paper with Valdez and Melton and Mize and Skubal, and then whoever the fifth one was, whether it was Justin Verlander or whomever, that looked like it was going to be the best. And then all of a sudden injuries mount and you're like, uh-oh. But now they're all healthy, reasonably healthy. We're still waiting on Verlander, but the rotation looks as good as advertised. But the problems still persist about adding the bat. And the bullpen you cobbled together is not good enough. He's got to make some real moves. And it's a balancing act for him because does he really think this team is good enough to go for it? Where you're giving up assets and maybe big assets that you were unwilling to part with last year. The Tigers could have added a bat last year in Suarez. They did not. They chose not to. And they certainly had resources to do it. They didn't get it done. They could have added other players. They didn't get it done. They could have added other better bullpen arms than what they did. They didn't get it done. You talk about going through the margins. What they added at the trade deadline last year, Kyle Finnegan was a nice add. But outside of that, it was, you know, guys who were in the last legs as starting pitchers, journeyman guys like Morton and whoever the other, I forget the other guy who they added. But it was
Paddock.
Paddock, thank you. But neither was... nobody expected those guys to be anything, and they weren't. They were not good.
Well, the thing was, Melton was demanded to be included in a lot of those trades, and now that looks like a really good decision. But I wonder if this series coming up, do you think this series has the potential to swing the decision for Scott Harris one way or another?
Against Philadelphia?
Yeah.
No.
You win this series.
Because you still have, like, if they lose this series. Let's not say swept. Let's say they lose two or three. They just lose the series. What does that mean for them afterwards? Well, the first series they have coming out of the All-Star break, they're three at the Angels. Angels are terrible.
But again, look at what they've done this year, though. They've performed so well against winning teams, and they haven't fared as well against the teams they're supposed to beat up on.
But that was May.
Correct.
So it's different.
You're right.
So, I mean, I'd be surprised, I guess, if they lost the series to Philadelphia and then laid an egg against the Angels. If you have extended for one series, no, I don't think one series is going to sway you one way or the other. I think it would have to be something over a 10-game stretch where if you lost 7 out of 10 games and you just knocked off all this goodwill you've built up, then I think you have to think twice about it and it gives you pause of what you're going to do. But this team's got the schedule ahead of them, Philadelphia. Then it's the Angels after the All-Star break. At the Cubs is not going to be easy, but then you've got four against Kansas City, three against Baltimore, three against the Athletics. That's a lot of ground you can make up against some bad baseball teams. And even though the Tigers' record might be similar to the Athletics, they just swept them. Even though the Tigers' record may be similar to Baltimore, Baltimore is not playing good baseball. And they're playing teams that they should beat. So I think this team is just poised to really make a run and be perhaps better than 500 before the trade deadline. 2-4-8.
Wow, that's the shot you're calling. That's
well, they're
big.
7 games back right now, and they've got all these winnable games coming up in front of them. And that's, you know, what are there, 20 games left or 18, 19 games left before the trade deadline? Yeah, I think they're poised to be at 500 or better.
And remembered, I mean, look, not putting the cart before the horse here. But just look at World Series champions. 1914 Boston Braves, not above 500 until August 3rd.
Oh, you're not doing this.
2021 Atlanta Braves, not above 500 until August 6th. There's precedent there.
Yeah, but that's two teams.
No, I understand.
It's two teams in 110 years of
baseball. One is recent.
Okay, well, then I certainly wouldn't cite 1914, but
it's possible.
248-539-9797. The telephone number, same or the text. We'll get to Adam, Matt, and others as we continue here at 97.1. Let's get back to the phones. 248-539-9797. Adam's in Royal Oak. You're next up here, 97.1. Hey, Adam.
Hey, good afternoon. I guess it's still morning, but I don't think the Tigers are going to make the playoffs. And I think, Gator, this is based on what you just said. Scott Harris is so bad at his job, he doesn't even know he's messed up the trade deadline yet, and it's still 3 weeks out.
How has he messed up the trade deadline?
How dare you say that, Scott?
Yeah, well, so if he would have traded Skubal on June 1st, he would have said, we're trading Skubal. The team is garbage, and we're selling.
Do you think the team's garbage?
Skubal would have been, when they were on June 1st.
Well, and so since then?
Since then, they've been playing better. But so just hear me out on this. I think it makes perfect sense. Teams would have been interested in Skubal. He would have been traded by now, probably for 3 or 4 prospects. Harris now has a month to figure out which prospects are really good and he wants to keep. Where does he have position redundancy? And who is he willing to trade? The team starts playing better in June. We get to the trade deadline, and he would have all these weapons to trade to bring in a bat.
So let me get straight. You don't think he could really help the team. You don't think, as the president of baseball operations of this team, that he has a firm grasp on what his prospects are? You think that now he's got a short window of three weeks to figure it out? You don't think he's figured this out by this point?
I think he knows his guys, but if he would have traded Skubal 3 weeks ago, he would have had a month to also look at these prospects.
Let me ask you this, Adam. How do you trade Skubal 3 weeks ago when he was just ready to make his debut again after the elbow surgery?
Sure, there would have been some delay, but I think teams would have really been watching.
Would the delay have been
there would have been a lot of bidding.
Would the delay have been perhaps 3 weeks? To see if he's going to come back, make a few starts, and see how he pitches?
That's impossible to say. And I hear what you're saying, but Harris hasn't even decided if he's going to trade Skubal. And honestly, it looks like he's just going to sit on it, and they're going to end up getting absolutely nothing.
But why do you think they get, like, if they decide to trade him and let teams know a week before the trade deadline, what difference does it make if you're letting teams know then or if you let them, 3 weeks ago? You're still going to get the same teams barking up your tree to say, hey, we want Skubal. You're still going to have Milwaukee, the Dodgers, the Yankees, and whomever else are going to be inquiring about him.
Right, but I think the difference is if they trade him 2 or 3 weeks ago, they know who they're getting in return, so they can look at their position redundancy and figure out of those redundant guys who they want to trade. If they trade Skubal in 2 or 3 weeks, they're getting guys and having to make buy decisions in a very quick.
I'm not sure I understand that. Like, give me an example of what's the position redundancy that they're going to get or not going to get.
Well, let's say that they trade Skubal for, and one of the guys they get is Los Angeles, maybe their best outfielder.
Okay.
So now they have Max Clark, they have this whomever outfielder. They can start saying, we can trade one of these guys because we've restocked that position with someone of Max Clark's ability.
How does that stop them from making a move now? Like if, for instance, and I guess thanks for the call, Adam. I completely disagree, and please do not characterize me as saying that I've said something about Scott Harris. Like, he's a terrible
GM.
I don't think that's the case at all.
Right.
I actually like Scott Harris's approach in theory. I have some questions about his offseason acquisitions.
Well, he's kind of got the same issue Eisenman does in this sense. They do a great job in the farm system, great job drafting. Their pro personnel scouting, the pro additions that they've made have been both kind of subpar in that respect. But Scott Harris is the principal reason why the farm system is what it is and why the organization had the highest winning percentage of any other all inclusive teams in baseball. I
mean, raise your hand. Do you think the Tigers have too many outfielders on their roster? No.
Right.
I mean, of course not. They don't have too many outfielders. They have a platoon right fielder in Kerry Carpenter, who they let hit against righties and not against lefties, though they're giving him more at-bats. But Carpenter kills righties. That's why, okay, but maybe not so much lefties. They don't have a center fielder right now. Okay, is Max Clark the center fielder of the future? Probably is. And they got Riley Green in left. So you still need extra outfielders. You have a DH position. The players that the Dodgers have to offer, they're all double-A players, so there's no guarantee they make the leap from double-A to the majors next year if they were to trade Skubal for a couple of these guys. It's a good problem to have. And as we've discussed more yesterday than today, but we did bring it up today, if you want to go after a big fish like, say, Mason Miller, if he becomes available, and the asking price is Max Clark, okay.
And that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at, Gator. I believe bullpen is this team's biggest weakness. I think bullpen is their biggest need. Not lineup. But what are we hearing from everybody? Lineup, bat.
Well, I think everybody would agree.
I think it's bullpen number one.
I think people would agree it is the bullpen, but people also want the shiny piece, which is the extra bat added to the lineup. And I think you're going to trade Skubal, you're likely to get prospects, and that's fine. And those prospects, I would hope, are going to be bats. But you can do both, as we've discussed a lot. You can absolutely do both. You can trade Tarik Skubal and get future assets and still trade your some prospects you have and get players that'll help you now.
But what they did last year was, I mean, redefine operating on the margins, and it actually made the team worse. What did they add last year at the deadline that helped them in any way, shape,
Kyle
or form?
Finnegan.
True. Good touche
to
you.
They didn't add enough. I'm not disagreeing with you, and yet the team was horrible in the second half of the season and somehow messed around and won the first round of the playoffs and somehow messed around and pushed the Seattle Mariners to a fifth game in 15 innings, which you look at that lineup and you're like, well, we can't beat the Mariners. And wait a minute, the Tigers have a chance. All they have to do is score in the top half of the inning and hold them off in a bomb at the inning for the next six
runners
innings.
On base. Couldn't do it.
They couldn't do it. Then that's a problem. And that's probably why everybody wants them to add another bat, because the bat cost them last year, 100%.
You can add both. I think bullpen is the biggest weakness this team has right now. Now 13 games consecutively, averaging over 5 runs offensively.
248-539-9797 is the telephone number. We're talking about the GMs in town. Which GM of the four teams has the toughest job ahead of them? Which one do you think has the easiest job ahead of them? And with the Tigers, call your shot. Do you think this is a team that's going to do it? Are they going to make the playoffs? We'll discuss all this and more. We got an interesting road raid question coming up as well here on 97.1.